So what we said is that we was going to find that common ground, the one thing that can galvanize us and bring us together. And so with this, we took the name Common Ground. The collective come from me, because I'm a firm believer in the collective way of life. And so with this, we formed Common Ground on September the 5th, 2005. Since then, we have served over 60,000 people. We have established 2 health clinics, and we are operating in 5 parishes. Parishes in Louisiana is like counties here, and we operate in 5 parishes. St. Bernard Parish, Plaquemine Parish, 2 of the parishes 2 hours south that was devastated by both Katrina and Rita, and to our west, Terrebonne Parish, and then Orleans and Jefferson. I'm going to just speak a few minutes about the abandonment, because literally the local, state, and federal government abandoned a segment of the population in Louisiana. That population had been basically those who have been disenfranchised ever since basically the formation of that city. And I'm talking about the African American community. When we realized that this tropical storm, Katrina, was going to turn into a major hurricane, we had basically 4 days to prepare for it. By the end of the first day, the call was made for mandatory evacuations. But the city had knew, because of a mock drill that we had the year before in 04 with Hurricane Pam, that it was going to be at least between 100 and 150,000 people out of the New Orleans population of 460,000 that did not have the means to evacuate. Those was the poor, whose average income was roughly around $7,000 a year, and they didn't have the means to leave. These was basically single women with children, the elderly, and basically I would say maybe about 20% was men. No one thought that the federal government would just allow them to lay and stay in New Orleans. Most people thought, like I did, after seeing that in Plaquemine Parish and in St. Bernard Parish, where they removed the poor to outside of the flood zone. So everyone thought that the same thing was going to probably happen in New Orleans. Then it was only at the last minute, and I'm talking about that Saturday before the hurricane hit, that we realized that New Orleans had no intention on removing the poor, but that they was going to place those who could not get out of harm's way in the Superdome and in the Convention Center, 2 areas that is built on some of the highest land in New Orleans. When the hurricane was approaching and they opened up the Superdome, every man, woman, and child, before they could enter into the Superdome, was searched. They were searched for 3 things: drugs, alcohol, and weapons. Many stood in line up to 5 hours waiting to get in because they had to be searched. The hurricane hit at the worst time in a poor person's life, and that's at the end of the month, where they are without resources or food. When they gave the order for people to come to the Superdome, they also asked people to bring food for 5 days. But again, government assistance only provide basically 3 weeks at the most of services. Normally at the end of the month, people just fend for themselves for the next, for that final week before the first of the month. And that's when this happened, on the 29th. So it caught people at the worst time. School was just open, so whatever cash money that a person was able to save, they had spent on purchasing school supplies and clothing. And that it was, it hit at the worst time on the 29th. The hurricane, as devastating as it was, we were spared. As a spiritual person, I believe we were spared because of the spirit of Emmett Till. And for those who don't know who Emmett Till is, he was an African-American kid of 16 who was killed in Mississippi in 1955 on August the 28th. He was tragically killed, for they say that he whistled at a white woman. And for that, he was taken out, beaten, and hung. And the reason why I'm saying this, because Hurricane Katrina did not hit New Orleans. It was heading to New Orleans all the way up to the 28th, the day of Emmett Till's death. Then it veered. And basically, the blunt of it hit Mississippi. I'm not trying to take away from what happened in Mississippi. But if that hurricane would have hit New Orleans, as ill-prepared as we was, between 10 to maybe 20 times as many people who perished during this hurricane would have died. When the hurricane hit, we was on the western side of the hurricane, which is the weakest side. And so the devastation that you see, or you have seen, of what transpired in New Orleans happened because the weakest side of a Category 4 hurricane brushed the city. It topped the levees and it breached levees. Most of the flooding that occurred happened after the hurricane had passed. When the hurricane hit, I was when the flooding began, I was cutting my grass. I had cleaned up after the hurricane, seeing that I needed a roof, and was cleaning my yard. Was counting my blessing and just knew that the city had been spared once again. We was without electricity, but that was it. That's when the calls started coming in about the flooding. But the first week after the flood, nobody did nothing. The federal government stood by but did not come in. FEMA. No one saw FEMA until maybe the mid part of the second week after the hurricane. No one saw the Red Cross in New Orleans until basically after the third week of the hurricane. People was trapped in a Superdome, many up to 5 days without anything, because no one had had the ability to think that just maybe if you put 30,000 people in a building, that you better have food, water, clothing, and sanitation. I'm telling you this because I want you to understand why certain events happen. Why the looting, or what I call the liberating, why this part happened. Because I want you to imagine you leaving from here and go home and find everything totally destroyed. To go home and find that you have no more clothes, you don't have a bed, you don't have nothing. And then to see the government not providing any form of resources. And this is when people took their survival and the survival of their neighborhoods into their own hands. 70% of the rescues that was made was basically made by people within the communities. Bodies, many stayed in the streets that wasn't flooded for up to 2 weeks. And it was under this that we formed Common Ground. When we realized the need, when we realized that the federal government had refused to act, and that if we was going to save those who was literally abandoned, then we had to do it ourselves. We formed the relief work, and then we formed first aid stations. These first aid stations operated, this first aid station operated for 3 weeks as the only first aid and then health clinic operating in New Orleans. And this clinic was manned by basically just volunteers, just health professionals that heard a call for peace and justice and answered that call. First, it was three street medics that literally stopped New Orleans from exploding into a race war. And then by doctors from basically all over the world that have came down and have consistently did what the government refused to do. At our health clinics, and we operate too, New Orleans is divided in half by the Mississippi River. So we operate two health clinics, one on each side of the river. The services is all free. It literally costs $22 a person. We have seen over 10,000. And if those 10,000 wouldn't have been able to receive the medical services that is offered at our health clinic, they would have had to go to the emergency rooms. So we're talking about in comparison of $22 a visit to going to an emergency room at basically about $400 a visit. This is the savings that our clinic provide for the state. And to this end, only when they finally realized the savings that we was giving them the opportunity to have in a state that is bankrupt, in a city that is bankrupt, that they finally gave us accreditation as a clinic. All the way up until then, only thing they wanted to do was shut us down. When we formed Common Ground, we founded it with $50. Sitting in my kitchen, Scott Crow, one of my heroes, and I, we basically put this organization together. I put up $20. My former partner, Sharon Johnson, she put up $30. And with this, we went to work. We started providing first ice, water, and food. Food that we know that was people was allowing to perish in their homes. So we took the food that we was able to obtain from our families, and we start serving it to those who was in need. And with this, we have expanded. Until now, we serve somewhere in the neighborhood of between 12 to 15,000 a month. We had from the meager beginning of 4 people to now we had a little over 2,300 to 2,500 volunteers to come and volunteer with us. And they have came from all over the world. Between the 3rd of March, and if I'm not mistaken, the 14th, we have over 1,000 volunteers that's coming down for spring break. What are they coming down and doing? They're gutting out homes. They're gutting out a faith-based institution, which we believe is the foundation in any given community. Community-based organizations. We are trying to reestablish the social safety nets that a community need. And to this end, we have been very successful. Last night, we was on Nightline because of the work that we was doing. But that was just the first phase of it. Because the work we are doing it in phases. I'm here tonight to basically, I'm just giving you a brief history. But I know I'm here to basically speak upon the Rebuild Green, which is our third phase. Our first phase was, again, the developer collective. Within that collective, we have developed our health clinics and our relief organization. Two nonprofits that is basically independent of each other. Our second component, which we are in the process of putting together now, is the construction phase. And with that, to that end, we are forming cooperative, construction cooperative. New Orleans was a city that had, in certain segments, had unemployment as high as 70%. But now, there's work for maybe the next 5 years, 5 to 7 years, which I think is truly is ridiculous. Why I say this? Because I'm still in New Orleans. But I truly believe that before you rebuild a city, the first thing you must do is secure that city. Our levy system is a failure, and we are still dependent upon that failure to protect us. Within 3 months, we will be right back in hurricane season. And I would hate to see this happen again. And it didn't have to. If we would have spent what we spent in Iraq in 2 months to preserve the wetlands, we would have had that first natural buffer, and those levees wouldn't have failed. We would have had an additional 40 miles that your Native American community, your Cajuns, your African American communities that is out and live in the bayous have been trying to get the federal government to do. $14 billion, that's all it would have cost. And we could have restored. And that's by the University, Louisiana State University, LSU. By theirs, analysis that the total cost for the restore the wetlands would have been $14 billion. So with by the fact that we refused to spend that $14 billion, now we may spend $100 billion. Many may say, well, instead of doing that, let's just get rid of New Orleans. But without New Orleans, you know, America would fall into a greater depression than it was in the 1920s. Almost 20% of the petroleum that is used in this country come from Louisiana, directly or indirectly. And if we don't preserve New Orleans, we will not be able to preserve those resources. We will not have a way to get to here in Phoenix, Arizona. The construction phase that we are doing, we are giving people hope. And at Common Ground, we work under two premises. The first is restoring hope. The second is teaching civic responsibility. Because we know in order to assure that a disaster never again turn into a tragedy, that we must, as a community, get involved. We must learn first response techniques. At Common Ground, we have developed a first response team that is second to none probably in the world, given resources. We can go to any disaster and within hours we could set up a relief operation that can handle up to 5,000 people. The construction plays a critical role, whether we building yurt tents or just places to house our distribution supplies. The construction plays that component. At present, we have gutted out a little over 300 homes. This month, we hope to gut out 250 homes. And once we gut these out, and the reason why we are gutting them out is because of a mole infestation that you could literally smell through the city. This infestation has become so devastating in the city that they have coined the phrase the Katrina cough. That's a dry cough that people have for going into these homes ill prepared. Why? Because we had a mayor who went and started going around the country telling people to come back to New Orleans when New Orleans don't even have one hospital that is functioning at 100%. Right now we have two functioning hospitals and they operate at 60 to 70%. We have a city that's by day have up to 200,000 people in it, and at night have maybe 90 to 100,000 actually living in the city. People are going into their homes without respirators, without proper clothing to do this work, because they have been told to come back to the city. And when they come back, there's no resources. So now we find that the major killer within New Orleans is stress. Suicide rate has skyrocketed. And stress, the stress of living in cars, the stress of having a trailer, a FEMA trailer parked in front of your house where you can't even get in it because they refuse to give you the key. The stress of seeing your children 6 months after the hurricane still cannot go to school because there's only three public schools operating in the city of New Orleans. This is happening in a major city in America, one of the most renowned cities in the world. 6 months after the hurricane, you have 9 charter schools and 3 public schools operating. And most schools have hundreds on their waiting list. So now instead of having kids in school, we have them just roaming the streets. Recreation end with the hurricane. The latter part, the last part, because I know, and please excuse me, because I am extremely tired. I was up late last night. I wound up missing my flight this morning. I had to go standby here. Had to drive from New Orleans to Baton Rouge in order to catch the flight. And then was hours behind. The third phase is to rebuild green. It is our hope and my dream to rebuild New Orleans and make it become the most progressive city in the world. And I didn't say in the South, I didn't say in America, but in the world. Why am I saying this? Because I have seen the beauty and the essence of the greatness of America, its people. I've seen young people come down and establish an internet system that's second to none. I've seen individuals come into communities where people would not have any way of gutting out their homes, having it done for them. So I've seen that essence. And I've seen individuals do it in some of the most unique and innovative ways that you could ever dream of. I went and spoke in Berkeley in November. And then by December, we had a group to come down from Berkeley. Drove from Berkeley, California to New Orleans and didn't stop once to buy gas. It cost them to drive two buses to New Orleans, $100. And they done it on vegetable oil. We have had individuals coming in and told me how we can build apartment complex and don't have to go on a grid. That we can do this in a way that we could rely on a natural resource, the sun, for our electricity. Ways of heating water without this gas guzzling hot water tank in your home. How can we build and build efficiently and affordable? I'm talking about Engineers Without Borders, who have came down and showed us way that we can build, and we could build sustainable and supportive housing. And we believe this, the combination of the three, common ground to do the relief work, to teach that civic responsibility so that we could be prepared for the next time that this happened, to the construction where people will learn a trade and build on that collective spirit to rebuild their homes. And then the third, the development, that we can rebuild and rebuild in a sustainable way.